broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Nick's Place. Don't sweat the technique. It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, Bates fam? Hey, how are we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brian McDonald out engineering at Nick's Place. A-Rod, Austin Rodriguez back at Gal, and it is a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, a getaway edition of the Killer Bees, broadcasting live from Nick's Place. Great, great place to spend any Friday. It's a great place to spend the first round of the NCAA tournament Friday. And also offering unbelievable drink specials right now. $4 beers and well drinks, $5 Ritas, $6 wine, all until 6. So swing on by, see the boys. What did you guys get to eat? Have you eaten yet?
Nothing yet. Saving it for a little later, so it'll be dinner, because I know how filling it's going to be and how delicious it's going to be.
You like the pizza, right? You're a big pizza
guy? Love the pizza here and the calzones. They are, to me, the best go-tos. Joe got himself a Happy Meal. He got the kid's version of a pizza that's about the size of his fist, and he's going to have a tough time finishing it, but he is enjoying it right now.
Why is he going to have a tough time finishing it?
Because he makes all these little excuses all the time how, I just really can't eat all that much at one sitting when it comes to pizza. And I'm looking at this little 4-inch tray they wasted just to bring out his pizza, going, that looks like one slice, but okay.
Well, if he's going to have trouble eating it, it sounds like he made a good decision.
Okay. I don't understand that. When you eat pizza this good and you eat that order that small, I don't know what you're doing. It's a waste.
Yeah. I mean, I see your point. I see both points. I can understand, you know, hey, I'm not going to eat it all. I don't want anything to go to waste. That would be mean to Nick. But I can also say, hey, I'm going to eat all of this because it's all very, very good.
His excuse is he's going to L'Auberge for this big soiree they're having for the bullpen for their show tomorrow, which BMAC is a part of. And so he's going for a steak dinner tonight and taking the wife on the roadie. So he wanted to save room.
That makes some sense. I like a good steak dinner. Good steak dinner is always very good. The NCAA tournament is going on right now. I'm sure I've been to Nick's Place, wall-to-wall TVs. I'm sure everybody's loving a little March Madness. Now, there's not a ton of great games right now. The best game on the board just went final. San Diego State escaping UAB. Clemson has jumped out ahead of New Mexico. I feel bad for Stetson. Stetson gets to make the NCAA tournament. They're getting a whooping from the defending national champ. And it was close for a while. Western Kentucky was giving a Marquette a run for their money in a 2-15 game, but Marquette's starting to pull away with it now. So a little bit of a lull in games at the moment, which is good because now we're on the air. We'll be joined by Corby Craig at 3:15 from BetUS, talk about the NCAA tournament. Lots to get to today. Rockets are playing really good ball. I jumped off the Embrace the Suck with the Rockets a week ago or so. Curious if Blankers is there. We'll get to that later. Who said it coming up at 4:30? And then, of course, a few more matchups in the Killer Bees Fight Club bracket after three fighters. Can we call them fighters? I don't know if we can call them fighters. Three guys advance to the next round of the Fight Club bracket. But first, what were your general takes, observations, takeaways from day one of the NCAA tournament? I think the top story is Kentucky's not very happy with Coach Cal right now.
No, and that one kicked me below the belt because I thought that there was enough talent on that team to take them quite a ways in this tournament. And I had made the comment, I forget what day it was, but the one thing that scared me was Coach Cal is a great recruiter, and he's just not a really good coach in the postseason. But I was like, you know what? Again, this is one of those years where talent should overcome, at least in the early rounds, no matter what coaching they do or don't get. And then I just watched that game last night going, what are they doing? And how are you not taking the ball out of Jack's hands? And I watched Oakland play the championship game of their conference tournament against University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and I thought, well, their main scorer is down low. But then I saw the way that they were attacking with the three, and I'm going, Cal, take it out of his hands. Make someone else beat you. Do something different and throw a wrinkle into it. And at the end of it, I understand why Kentucky fans aren't happy with Cal. I think he's 1-4 in his last five tournament games, and that's not a good look for a program that's that good.
Yeah, I saw the like teams that have won two tournament games over a span of like however many years it's been, and Kentucky's won, and they have like Drake there. You have some teams that you wouldn't think of there. You know, Kentucky's that team. Kentucky's, oh, they have all these five stars. They have these guys that are draft picks that are going to be in the lotto. But I think now more than ever, whenever you have transfer portal, when you have fifth-year seniors, you currently still have these COVID seniors too. So you have guys who are like 6 years out of high school playing these freshmen. You know, a lot of coaches say they don't want to be caught young. And Kentucky's had this theory for the last few years, hey, we're going to – maybe like a decade. It's been going on forever. We're going to have these one-and-done guys, and we're just going to win based on talent. Look, Kentucky, like if you take their roster and you take the roster of the other team, like who's going to have more pros? Kentucky's going to have more pros. But who's a better college basketball team who's going to win that game? Well, probably not going to be Kentucky.
Yeah, no, and the thing is it used to be where he had a corner on the market. Get the one-and-dones, load up. You know, you got more talent than most in the country. You ride it out, and in most cases, the worst you do is an Elite Eight or a Final Four, and you might sneak out and win one or two. But now, because of the portal, because of transferring, he's saying, I might have to evaluate things differently, because he himself admitted he had gotten most of the five stars. He was taking them away from the likes of Carolina and some of the other schools, even Duke to some degree. But now everybody's going wherever they want. They're loading up with guys that aren't young. They're capitalizing on the experience as well as the talent. And it's more of a level playing field, and it's caught Cal literally over the last 5 years.
Yeah, it's a fun time of year. It hasn't been that fun for Cal. I don't think that they let him go. I still think that he's the guy that that comes back. He'll be just fine. Kansas was able to escape a live game yesterday, and they got taken down to the wire. It was everybody's popular pick, but Kansas was able to pull away, win that game. They were up by 20 and then almost gave it up at the end, which would have been a tough loss
Dickinson
for them.
Dickinson was back because he was a difference maker. They couldn't stop anybody in the post.
Yeah. Dickinson was, you know, they said that he was going to play after they announced that Kevin McCullough was not going to play. Just went final, Marquette beating Western Kentucky. So Marquette got a game from the 15-seed Hilltoppers, but Marquette pulls away at the end.
Yeah, look, that one was one that I was worried about, obviously, with Milwaukee being the home of Marquette. But Colek looked like he hadn't missed a beat. I was concerned for kind of later on in the tournament for a two-seed. They need him or they're not going anywhere. And he jumped out of the gates with, I think, 6 of the first 8 points. But he looked like he hadn't missed much. So hopefully that speaks well for Marquette going forward.
Yeah, I'll be curious. That bracket at the bottom is kind of a mess. You know, it's kind of messed up now because you have NC State that advanced. Now, that was kind of a popular pick, NC State over Tech, but no one really expected Kentucky to lose. You know, a blue blood, some people had them going deep into the tournament because they have tons of talent. But you know, they fell into a hot Oakland team yesterday. That dude looked like Gary Kubiak, by the way, the guy that hit all those three-pointers.
Jack, what's his last name?
If you're going to go in with the name, you got to know it. I don't know his last name.
Grokey?
It looks like Kubiak. It looks like Gary Kubiak's son to me. It looks like a younger version of Gary Kubiak. He actually didn't
look like
all
Matthew
that much
Perry's
younger
brother.
Than Gary Kubiak. Yeah, somebody said he looked like Matthew Perry. I see more Kubiak than I see Perry, but I can see a little bit of the Perry.
He's from Pewaukee, Wisconsin.
You know, I saw Lance post his overall stats on the year. He's taken like 3 2-pointers on the year. And the guy's like a volume shooter. Six. There you go. Thank you for that. Yeah, like it's nothing. Like the guy, he's taken like 200-300 shots on the year, and only 6 of them have been inside the 3-point line. It's ridiculous.
How does that happen with layups, breakaways? Randomly every now and then, someone's going to get an easy bucket or two, but only 6 twos on the entire season? That's crazy to me.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I've been looking to see like which conferences are doing well, and I can't really make a case for like which conferences are doing well. Maybe the ACC, like the ACC's been okay, right? Like NC State beat Texas Tech. Maybe the Big Ten, like you had Northwestern beat FAU a little bit earlier today in overtime. Illinois, they're a 3 seed, but they were able to come away with the victory. North Carolina's a 1 seed; they should be winning that game. I can't really make a case for a conference yet.
No, not yet. I mean, a lot more has to still play out. Jack Golke.
Golke, that's it.
Yeah. He's telling everybody we're not a Cinderella. They got he and the and their big man down low can play. They've got two guys that can allow them to compete. But they're the St. Pete's of a year ago or 2 years ago. There's always going to be a Cinderella like this. It's a great story. Even if he doesn't want to be called that, everybody's going to watch them a little closer and pull for them a little bit more, and it's a great story. But on the conference thing, you know, there's a couple in the running. The Big Ten obviously still has Purdue and Illinois that are high seeds. And Northwestern got a big win today. That was a very much a nail-biter, a good game early today, and they eked one out. So it's interesting to see how the conference play is going to go, because everybody knows the best conference in the country is the Big 12. Let's see how they all play. Baylor got a blowout today, too. So hopefully U of H sets the tone early tonight and everybody rolls from the Big 12.
I mean, you can make the case the Big 12 hasn't looked good, though. Like, Baylor won their game today, but Baylor was a number 3 seed. Iowa State was a 2. Kansas was able to barely escape, and they did it as a number 5 seed. And then you look at the 2 6 seeds that lost. BYU lost to Duquesne, and 6 seed Texas Tech lost to NC State. Now, Texas did advance as well, so it's kind of been a mixed bag there. But Texas didn't look fantastic. It's just that Colorado State looked worse. Colorado State had 11 points at the half yesterday. 11
I looked at that game multiple
at the
times
half yesterday.
I was flipping around going, that has to be a misprint. That has to be a first-half score, and they're just not covering it right. And then I started I put it on, and they were talking about who had timeouts left and if they're going to have to foul. I'm like, oh, my God, what a low-scoring game. I thought Texas was going to run the score up and have a big game. But low-scoring, but they got a win. What'd you think of the call in the Stetson at the end of the Samford-Kansas game?
That was a bad call.
It was a real bad call.
It was Timberlake that went up, and Timberlake said in the press conference, he said he was fouled, and I was like, okay, you weren't. It was a bad call. I think the referee made the call because of the fall. He saw that it was a really bad fall, and it's like, okay, well, I better blow my whistle, because it did seem like it was a slight delay, not like crazy late, like we see from time to time, but it was a little bit late, and it was after he saw the fall. So I thought that he called it there. I know that they were talking about it in the post game, Kenny Smith and Clark Kellogg, and Kenny Smith proposed that, you know, they should get a challenge to college basketball. I don't know how I feel about that, because you get all of these reviews late and it takes forever to finish these games. Yeah. I can live with one challenge. Like, I would be okay with that.
Yeah, me too. The more I thought about it, because I had heard it being thrown out there, the one thing that's really bad is just how many times the commercial breaks, especially in the second half of college games, seem to be forever. That you don't, I hate, because then you added extra stoppage for review. But if the objective, like it always is at the end of the day, to make sure you get the call right, especially at the most important time of the year, I'm all about having at least one challenge per team, because that would have been a lot more interesting to see how that game ended had they got the call right there. And I'm in total agreement with you. If he doesn't fall awkwardly the way he hit, it went down and fell, I don't think they should have blown that whistle at all. I mean, that's the only reason why I could see that he did, because there was no contact.
That was a really bad call. You know who went to Oakland, by the way? Brendan Riley.
Yeah, Brendan Riley went to Oakland. I was thinking about that.
Yeah, I sent him a text yesterday, like, hey, Oakland. And he told me that it was the start-to-finish top five most stressful sporting event that he's ever watched, which sounds very on par with Brendan. 2-3-4-1, Pac-12 is undefeated. Yeah. Pac-12 playing some good basketball. Oregon advanced as an 11 seed. Washington State, they were a popular upset loss in the first round, and they were able to escape. Drake, you know, advanced. So you had the 7 seed there. You had the 11 seed advance. Did am I missing anybody? Yeah, Arizona. Arizona, the 2 seed, beating Long Beach State. Give credit to the Pac-12 there as well. A couple of texts, 713-780-ESPN. Another one here from 1642. Zach, thoughts on the NBA Tonight crew on college basketball? Always love seeing Ernie, and he says Shaq instead of Shaq, but maybe Siri got him. What do you think of the NBA Tonight crew doing some college basketball?
I like it. I always think it's kind of humorous, because I know Charles doesn't pay nearly the attention that he should to college basketball, but he knows the game of basketball. But look at his bracket, and you're like, yeah, he just doesn't watch a lot of basketball. But I just like the variety. They have so many different opinions and voices on it, to where you can get some really good basketball insight. So I actually like those guys involved in it.
Yeah, I think it's good. I like them more in the studio than, like, on the game. Reggie Miller did some college basketball. He's not on the TV crews there, but I actually liked Reggie Miller on it. But I like whenever you have the traditional college guys that are calling college games. The Kevin Harlan does both, so, like, I'm cool with that. But now I think about it, like, I like Brian Anderson, so.
Oh, I love Brian Anderson.
So maybe I don't actually believe that now I start thinking about that a little bit.
Who's your favorite team? broadcasting
Houston.
For a game?
Houston.
For
Houston
college? No, I understand that, smartass. Who's your favorite broadcasting team for college basketball?
Like in the tournament?
I really
and
love...
current?
Yeah, I love Raff and Grant Hill,
yeah.
And I believe they're with Brian Anderson.
No, they're with Ian Eagle.
Oh, with Ian Eagle. Yeah, if I could substitute Brian Anderson as the play-by-play guy, because Ian Eagle gets a little cheesy.
I love Ian Eagle. I think Ian Eagle is the best.
I don't. I like Brian Anderson better. I love Harlan better. But I like the kind of old school, new school with Grant Hill and Raff. I love that kind of back and forth.
I like that crew a lot. Kevin Harlan's probably my favorite play-by-play guy. But Ian Eagle's right there, like right next to him. He's my he's really nice, too. Really good dude.
Is
like he comes up to me, hey, calls me by my first name. He's giving me, like, the TV graphics of, like, what they're going to show and stuff from, like, all their prep guys.
Cool.
Yeah, he's solid of the earth. I like that guy a lot. I love Rafferty's awesome, too. Like, you know, have a couple jokes with him. I haven't really talked to Grant. Much, but I think he's really good on air. I think that crew's really good, and I mean they are the A team. That's the one that's calling the Final Four. Ian Eagle's taking over for Nance as the voice of the Final Four. All right, let's talk some college. Yeah, he took over. Nance retired, and Ian Eagle took over.
I knew Nance retired. I didn't know if they had made because I just assumed Harlan would be that guy.
No, it's Ian Eagle's on that A team. Corby Craig, BetUS, he has everything you need to know about betting the college basketball tournament, whether it's the games tonight, maybe a little live action, maybe this round of 32 coming up this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. Corby Craig, BetUS, joins us next. Busy show, 713-780-3776, twitch.tv/ESPN975, on YouTube at ESPN Houston, just search that. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Nick's Place. Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Go straight out to the HRNP guest line. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Nick's Place. $4 beer, well drinks, $5 Rita, $6 wine, all until 6 o'clock. Fantastic food, fantastic vibe, fantastic people. Come on, hang out with the boys over at Nick's Place. Going out to the HRNP listener line, being joined by Corby Craig of BetUS. Corby, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to hang out with the Killer Bees. How are you enjoying the NCAA tournament so far? What has stood out to you the most?
Yeah, I'm here in Las Vegas. You know, I can't complain at all about March Madness, but as a UAB alum, that's in the book. But no, it's been a great Madness, first time of the year, and excited to talk to basketball with you guys.
How much were you just sweating that game? What was the number on it? Do you have any action on your team, or do you stay away from playing a little action on the teams that you like?
Yeah, spread was 7. I bet the 7. I also bet the money line, so that kind of stinks. I knew that they were going to run a 2-3 zone in the second half. Just had the idea that Andy Kennedy is a really good coach at making adjustments when he's a far less talented team. Kennedy just did a great team, and they deserve to win. But it looked like we had the right team. We're just foul trouble. It's too big, too strong. It's an issue that these mid-majors are going to run into time and time again. And inevitably, it did happen to the Blazers. But you know, we had our shot, and at least we were there.
You ever mess with the live stuff, Corby?
What was that?
You ever mess with the any live game betting in game?
Yeah, from time to time. I think it's a very beatable market. The issue is just getting down fast enough. Like the lines will move so fast. Somebody runs down the court with a shot, and you like the number at 6.5 now, it's 5.5, and you play a weird game of back and forth. But there's definitely times like in the Marquette game. If you watch the second game, Western Kentucky, first half of dreams, like college kids would hope that they could do them, not smart. And you kind of assumed that would at some point regress, and because of it, it did.
Joining us on the HRNP listener line, it's Corby Craig of BetUS. What were your takeaways of the Kentucky-Oakland game? Do you think Coach Cal survives this?
I don't know. I was talking to one of my friends about this. It's a crazy thought. It's like, is Coach K on the bubble? And, I mean, he has all the pieces. It feels like a spot where I don't know if they can get rid of him actually, but it is a put up or shut up. He's had so many chances at this point. I do think that it's more of a coaching thing, which is unfortunate to say. I love Coach Cal, but like this is not a good Oakland team. And the kid hit 10 threes. Like, at some point, you have to change your scheme to not the guy that's scoring all the points, or you're going to lose, and inevitably they did.
Yeah, watching the second half, just really the whole game. I mean, you had Kentucky, for goodness sakes, throw the ball out of bounds after a free throw miss on a live ball. But just coming down the floor, jacking up threes, throwing it away, turning it over, found that game to be interesting. And you have that, you know, there's theories out there in college basketball that you don't want to be young, right? You don't want to have a bunch of freshmen. You have the transfer portal. You have fifth-year, six-year seniors because of COVID. Do you factor that in at all whenever you're handicapping these teams, the
100%.
Youth versus the maturity?
100%. Also, there's a factor of the idea of, like, team player. The issue with Kentucky is this, and y'all watched it, but this is a team of five kids who play at the AAU circuit, and they think that they can score on top of everybody. And so that's what you get. You get fast threes, you get drives to the basket of unfortunate, like, fadeaway jumpers that probably shouldn't be taken. It's not a team sport. It turns into an individualized basketball game, which has been proven time and time again just doesn't work. You look like a team like Marquette, who Tyler Kolick is. Even when he was young, he was a team player. I think if you had five Tyler Koliks in Kentucky, you don't care if they're freshmen. You care that a team knows how to play the sport of basketball, not the game of basketball. And right now at current, Kentucky's a really good NIL school. They get really good talent, and they just can't mold into a team.
Corby Craig of BetUS joining us on the HRMP listener line. Two games going on right now. UConn leads at the half against Stetson, 52-19. Also at the half, Clemson with a 42-28 win against lead against New Mexico. 10 games left the rest of the day, Corby. What do you have your eye on?
Yeah, it's one of the grossest ones that you could possibly bet. But we also what happened last year with Purdue, and I can't imagine that this team is absolutely dialed in to not let that happen again. So you can get Purdue minus 26.5. I think that's a great bet for a few reasons. First off, you're not going to get a more focused team in round one, mate. This is a team that just got historically blown out. And Boston, literally the Cinderella. And now you see a team in Grambling that they're going to face who doesn't even really have a center. They won their game to play in by hitting four threes. They don't shoot threes. They drive to the basket, tug the shoulder, they try to get to the foul line. And in flat play, that works. The issue is, if you're driving the basket into Zach Eady, I don't know if five guys can score on Zach Eady, more or less one guy with a basketball. So, good luck to them trying to find ways to score, and if they can, I would gladly be wrong, but I don't know if Grambling can actually score points in this game, and it wouldn't surprise me if this is an absolute blowout, 40-plus, and you can get 26.5, so I feel plenty fine on the idea that Grambling doesn't score.
I found it funny after Grambling won that game the other day, and the studio guys were like, this is a terrible matchup. This is an awful matchup for Purdue. And it's like, they're 26.5-point favorites, dude. Calm down. Like, chill out. It's going to be all right.
Yeah. Like, everyone likes to paint the notion that there's going to be the next upset. And the only upset potential I saw in this tournament was Western Kentucky earlier today. Marquette came back in the second half, and they cleaned it up. But no, I do agree it's a terrible matchup, but the exact opposite way. Grambling doesn't even have a center. They usually play five guards. So to say it's a terrible matchup, I would highly disagree, and I think Mark assumes to agree. Everyone just wants to paint this idea of, like, Purdue is going to lose another 16. I've heard people say, we need to see them do it before I trust them, and it's like, they're the number one team in the nation. They are a very good basketball team, inevitably.
Have you looked ahead to tomorrow at all?
I have not. If you can shoot me some look ahead lines, I'm looking at the screen at Circa right now. I see Texas A&M plays Nebraska. I really like this Texas A&M team. I know you are in Houston, and that's an interesting. Is that tomorrow or tonight, Ken?
That's tonight. Yeah, we're actually the home of the Texas Aggies. So thanks for mentioning that.
Nice. you have a few teams around you. So you have A&M, who I actually like a lot in that game. A&M. I mean, how can you not like Wade? He is an absolute baller. But more important, I don't know y'all's opinions on this. I mean, Houston's great. Obviously, I can talk about Houston all day. But more important, I think the market really disrespects this Texas Longhorns team. I don't know how y'all feel about Texas and radio stations. Usually it's either really good or really bad. No indifference on the Texas Longhorn type of teams. But, I mean, this team is good. They were playing 3-point favorites yesterday, and we saw how that ended. They should have not have been. They probably should have been a 7-point favorite. They're going to face a Tennessee team who only has really one great player in Kolick. If you can figure out how to stop Kolick, this is still a top 20 team, but it's not this Tennessee team that everybody talks. We saw Rick Barnes is not a great coach in March, so I think this Texas team has a ton of upset potential in them.
Corby, you mentioned you could talk all day about Houston. Maybe not all day, but maybe for a couple of minutes. What do you like about this Cougar team?
100%. I love this team. I talk about a Kentucky team who has no player who wants to play team basketball. They have five ISO guys. And you look at Houston, and you see a team who is basically the exact opposite. They have scores, they have pieces that on any other school, like we saw Cryer at Baylor. Cryer at Baylor was kind of an ISO basketball player. He scored at his will. He's a great basketball player. And yet, when you get into the system and you get into the scrappiness that they like to play, there's not even really a lottery draft pick, I would say. You could argue that there are some talented pieces that probably could go in the lottery, but not like in Kentucky where Dillingham and Shepard are going in the top probably 15. This is a Houston team that is just five guys that love the game of basketball and know how to play. And it's what you get with Houston every year. We saw this basically the same team last year play very good basketball and have some unfortunate runs. The only worry is they play a little too slow for my liking. I wish they would just speed up a little bit because if a team is shooting hot, Houston is, it puts themselves into a position of being in trouble. And it looks like as of when I last checked the score, they'll be playing, the game's still going on honestly, but it looks like it'll be Clemson, which would be a great matchup. New Mexico actually would cause some trouble for Houston's speed. But I do think, Clemson's up 17 at this point.
Houston gets A&M Nebraska winner. Clemson will play Baylor if they hang on.
Oh, A&M. So, right. I'm trying to multitask.
Yeah, you're doing lots of things, Corby. We're all right. We're good.
Yeah. So the issue here, and I just talked about I love Taylor Wade Taylor, is A&M, I mean, you guys know, they played Houston earlier this year. And we see an A&M team who, you hit a couple more shots. I mean, we could debate on who should have won that game. Like, I saw a game that I had Houston in, and I really liked this Houston team. But Texas A&M defense is scrappy. They like to push right back. Nebraska, I will say, I think Houston would absolutely walk the doors off of them. But A&M, I worry. Buzz is a great coach. I think they have a few talented pieces, and if you start getting hot, I would worry for Houston. But I do have Houston going all the way through my bracket. And I actually have them winning my championship. So the Cougs are my squad for the tournament, and I do think they are far and away the best. And I think second round, if they can walk up and turn into a good basketball game versus an A&M team, that's a really good battle test. I mean, you never want to be the team that, like, shout out UConn right now. I don't know the score, but the last time I checked, it was like a 35-point game. You never want the team that didn't face adversity going through the bracket, but then you're setting yourself up. So I think A&M could be that good wake-up call, you know, to head to the Sweet 16 and have the Cougs ready.
Yeah, a 4-point game when they played the first time around. Houston jumped out to that 20-point lead. Wade Taylor went bonkers in the second half and willed it back to a tie with like 90 seconds to play. Corby, great stuff. Thank you for joining us. Looking forward to catching up again next week ahead of the Sweet 16 matchups. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, guys, I appreciate it. We'll talk to Houston next week, too, while they're still in the tournament.
Sounds good. Corby Craig, BetUS, joining us on the HRNP listener line. Let's switch it up to the pro game. Rockets beating the Bulls yesterday. Seventh win in a row. Blankers, are you ready to jump off the embrace the suck with the Rockets? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. I assume you knew. You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Nick's Place.
Come hang out with the boys at Nick's Place. $4 beer and well drinks, $5 Ritas, $6 wine, all until 6. Food is fantastic. And the rumor mill, Blankers, is saying that all of our favorites are there.
Oh, my goodness, they keep piling in. Crystal Collins just got here. Day One Donna is here. Everybody's piling in. Paulie's holding court in the front table. Joe was just here with those guys. It's piling up. My buddy Reed from basketball just walked in. Got a lot of guys, a lot of good people in this place. Always.
Does Reed get 20 on you?
No, but he is extremely long wingspan guy that gets a ton of offensive rebounds.
What do you think Paul is holding court about? What do you think he's talking about?
He was trying to talk Rockets. That only lasted about 30 seconds. But now because he's talking to the two females, I'm sure they're talking about fashion.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Paul's pretty good at that.
He's got the short jeans on today with the Red Sox.
That's in. Do you own a pair of jeans? I don't think I've ever seen you in a pair of jeans. Now I think about it.
Yes, multiple.
I don't think
pairs
I've ever seen
jeans,
you in
yes.
a pair of jeans. Rockets one.
I've had a couple of sales meetings that rolled into right before the show, and I was dressed up for those with jeans.
I don't remember. I don't remember that.
That's
so
my
funny?
New dress up. B-Max laughing because I dressed up for those meetings. I had jeans on.
Oh, you know, I think you wore jeans at the Keyshawn Johnson thing, right?
Oh, yeah. I wore slacks for that one.
Yeah, then I don't remember you ever wearing jeans. Anyways,
right.
Rockets beat the Bulls yesterday by 10. Seventh win in a row for the Rockets, Blankers. They've also pulled within 2.5 games of Golden State for 10th place, and they're only 3 games back from the Lakers in 9th place. Are you still holding strong to embrace the suck with the Rockets?
Yeah, I am. I am, because I really am pleased with what I wanted to see, which is a lot of development from a lot of the young guys. I think that's fantastic. I really still think that, you know, regardless of whether they can catch the teams ahead of them or not, that it's probably going to be short-lived. I'd love to see them do whatever is necessary to play well, stay in games, but if they got a better shot to keep their own pick, that's where I'm all about. I'm gonna stay with that opinion. I understand the winning. I don't hate anybody that wants to see them win and get in, even if it's one game. But I'm just looking at the best options for the long term to try and find any way possible to have a better percentage to keep their own pick.
Yeah, see, I've, you know that I'm off of that. This has been fun. Yep. Like this Rockets team has been fun. You know, and I know that they've had an easy part of the schedule, but that's fine. Like, you should capitalize on the easy part of your schedule. Every team should. Winning 7 in a row, lots of fun. If they're able to like catch one of these teams and all of a sudden they're like playing a play-in stake game, that would be awesome. So like I didn't think that it was possible for them to get into this position. That's why I was embrace the suck a few weeks ago. But they've played themselves into me changing my tune on this because they're in the mix. They're in the mix.
Yeah,
they're playing really good basketball, and I want to see them continue to do this. Jalen Green had another good game, 26 points. You know, I think there is something to the Alpi being off the floor. And look, I think that they can coexist, but there is something to be said about how you can play a five-out offense. Because when you don't have Alpi clogging up the middle, I'm not going to say
spacing,
some things
yeah.
about Alpi, but all of a sudden you slide Jabari to the five, and Jabari can knock down a three. So you have to respect that opens up the floor. You're also getting Amen Thompson into the game, and he's unbelievable. Like, he's a really good defensive player. I know he can't shoot, but he can get offensive rebounds, putbacks. He can dunk with authority. So I like this at the Rockets actually without Alpi Şengün on the floor, and then also you're a better defensive team by a mile. Like, if you can slide Jabari to the five, and then you slide in Amen to your starting five, and you don't have to play a defensive liability, you're a way better defensive team. Now, you know, it's up to Ime to figure out the best way to get all of your weapons involved, and I still think that Alpi is a weapon, no doubt. Like, this winning streak without him isn't going to change my mind, and Jalen Green playing well without him isn't going to change my mind. But I do think that there are some correlations to Jalen Green playing well, really well, without Alpi on the floor. Now, there was some controversy yesterday. DeMar DeRozan with a hard foul on Jalen Green. He pretended like he was blitzing the pick and roll and just wiped out Jalen Green. Any debate whether it was intentional or not? I think it was 100% intentional.
I do, too. I think that he did it intentionally. I think that, you know, he was mad about getting the dunk blocked or the drive blocked.
That was like 3 possessions earlier, though. Did he carry that with him?
I mean, some guys do. They carry. Look, we've got Dylan Brooks on the team. There's a lot of guys that we've seen over the history of the game that can carry some animosity with them for a few plays. But for whatever the reason, you know, because there was so much space there for Jalen, it's like if you're blitzing the pick and roll, then you would have a guy doubling with you, or there'd be a way to kind of take it out of Jalen's. He just came up full bore and just crushed him. Well, it was unnecessary. I love the fact that Dylan Brooks had his teammates back, that he went, and I don't think that it was intentional, the elbow that Dylan Brooks caught across the chin, but I think that elevated it to even a bigger level, to that it had it all play out with the multiple scrums and everything that went on after that. But I thought it was unnecessary. I thought DeRozan deserved everything that he got, and I thought that it was good on Dylan Brooks for going to have his teammates back and go to his rescue.
Yeah, Dylan Brooks and Amen Thompson definitely did more in that scrum than Laremy Tunsil did when his quarterback got into a scrum
a few
months ago, which it's ironic how many people liked Dylan Brooks and Amen Thompson, you know, doing what they did in that thing, but are so anti what I had to say about Laremy not being there. Just saying. I think the foul was intentional by DeRozan. Maybe it was the dunk. I think it was frustration just collectively. Like, he didn't have a good shooting game. Maybe the dunk sent him off. Like, I don't know. I would love to know his intent. You know, post-game he said that he was just blitzing the screen and kind of stumbled into Jalen. I'm not buying that story. I do think it was intentional. I don't hate an intentional hard foul from time to time. I really don't. Like, it's good hard basketball. Sometimes you send a message. What's the difference between what DeMar DeRozan did than a Houston Astro buzzing a hitter or hitting a hitter intentionally? Sometimes it's just good old basketball. Sometimes it's just good old baseball. So I don't hate that DeRozan did that. I don't at all hate what Dylan Brooks did. I loved it, actually. Amin Thompson going to check up on Jalen Green. Like, that's cool, too. Be a good teammate. And then I'm totally fine with DeMar DeRozan when somebody's grabbing your shoulder to turn around and confront a guy who's grabbing your shoulder from behind. All of that, to me, was much ado about nothing. It was a hard, yes, intentional foul. I'm not going to get up in arms by some people. Well, kick him out of the league. Come on, man. It's a good hard foul. Maybe not a good hard foul, but a hard foul. And then everything that happened after that, sweet. I loved what Dylan did. I loved what Amin did. But you know what I loved about it the most? Jalen Green's response. Instead of Jalen Green being a little, like, wuss and shutting down and crawling into a shell and disappearing, how did he finish that game? By playing strong. Well, yeah. By winning the game, by beating Chicago by 10. I love seeing that side of Jalen Green. That was the best takeaway that I had out of that whole ordeal.
And that's the best thing you can have out of it. Jalen Green doesn't want to fight anybody, and it's probably better that he doesn't because he's not one of these big, intimidating forces. Plus, you don't want to lose him in the middle of a game where he's been playing so well and the team's been playing so well, and he's been a main reason why. So he handled it absolutely the right way. I thought that everybody that had his back and that got a little feistier after that, even Jock Landale and other guys, I thought that was fantastic, and it added a little more spice and drama to the game and maybe made it even more competitive. I loved every bit about that, but I love the fire of this entire team, because think about what we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, and with this winning streak as it relates to the success of the team, they've been feistier, they've been scrappier, they have been fighting literally more, but fighting for every game, and it's been adding to your viewing enjoyment when you watch this team and you want to see them succeed. I liked all of it. I don't think they would have had that under Steven Silas. I don't think that Steven Silas would have encouraged it. I don't think Steven Silas would have been happy with it. I don't think Steven Silas had that fire in his belly to even teach it. And I don't kid yourself now. I think that to some extent, Udoka's a guy that says, you're going to have your teammates back, and we're going to play a certain way with a chip on our shoulder. But that also means if one of our players is willing to go out there and or gets hit or is going out there and getting into it with someone, you're not going to Laremy Tunsil. You're not going to walk away. You're going to be, you know, having it. We're going to have everybody's back. We're going to stick together. And that's what makes you realize. I've been preaching for 2-3 years about how these mirror images of these two franchises, the Texans and the Rockets, from the standpoint of just on this particular situation with the team, you know you got the right coach. You know he has the right philosophy and mentality for his players. And you know that his players are playing for him the way he wants them to play because what you saw again last night. They're feisty. They're not backing down. They're tough. And they're starting to believe more and more. That's great.
They're taking on the personality of their coach.
Yes.
You know, they're taking on. Like, Ime was really frustrated with the Rockets, like a game or two after the All-Star break, called them soft, all of these things. And it's like, since then, they've taken on the personality of Ime Udoka. And I love it. Like, I like teams that play hard. I like teams that play with a chip on their shoulder. I like teams that play physical. I'm not scared of a scrap. That's why I didn't really hate what DeMar DeRozan did. Hey, and Jalen Green wasn't necessarily, like, rolling in that spot. But, hey, old-school basketball, a guy's rolling, put him on his tail. Let's see if he continues to roll. Like, hey, I'm okay with that. Like, I really am. Like, I don't despise what DeRozan did at all. I don't like that it was more frustration. Like, it wasn't to, like, send a message to Jalen, or it wasn't like to try to cool him down, because he really wasn't going off yet. He wasn't really having a great game. He was just kind of, you know, mid. It was more the frustration part of it and the intentional part of it. But like good old school basketball, like a Rodman, a Lambeer, even a Draymond Green will do it. If a guy's rolling, or Patrick Beverly would do it in the past. When a guy's having a good game, okay, let's put him on his tail and let's see if he can continue doing that. I don't mind that style of basketball. I like it, actually.
I think the one adjective you left out when we were talking about everything with this team, I think the one thing is I like it because they're together. The fact is they're together. The way they play, the way they have each other's back. But we saw too much isolation and one-on-one individual play under Silas. You don't see that, and that's not acceptable to their head coach. just like he expects them to be together on the defensive end, be on the same page, help the helper, rotate, do those things. And yep. then when it comes to being feisty, being tough, being kind of the point you're making, those guys are not going to walk away from it. They're not going to shy away from it, whether it's they're delivering it or they're reacting to it. The fact is that this is a totally different mentality on this team, and that's what makes it more fun to watch and easy to back this team and want to see them continue to do well.
You can just sum it up in, like, being competitive. And it takes all of those things to be competitive. Like, it takes, yeah, talent. It takes good coaching, but it takes that toughness. So I like mm-hmm. what I've seen a lot. What's it going to take for you to jump off the embrace the suck for the, you know, final month or two of the season?
I mean, I don't know. Look, it's what I personally would like to see, but I'm also not hating on anybody that wants to see them actually get the W's at the end of the game. Like, if they catch one of the teams and they get in, obviously I'm going to be rooting for them and I'm all for it. I just don't know. I just think that it's going to be short-lived because if it's the Lakers or it's Golden State or one of those teams, I don't think they're there yet, though it would still be fun to watch. And it's kind of like when you and I were talking about when the Texans were flirting with, before we knew they were going to actually win the division, getting in versus not getting in and what that would mean for a young team. Mm-hmm. I think it's the same thing for the Rockets. If they get a chance to smell it, to experience it, to understand it a little bit more by being in it, so be it. I'm fine with that too.
Yeah, I want the high stakes. And, you know, play-in is not as high stake as playoffs, but I think it's a natural evolution. Okay, get a high stakes play-in game. Maybe even you lose it. Maybe you lose that game. Okay,
yeah.
We got a taste. We know what it's like. We want to be there again. And then you also have the feeling of losing a high stakes game as motivation to you not wanting to either be in that spot again, just go ahead and make the real playoffs. And I think that you build off of that build. How bullish are you for the build? How good is the future of the Rockets? Also, we got to play some of this sound from the Chicago Bulls. And I usually like Adam Amin, but they went in on the Houston Rockets during this scrum yesterday. I thought it was a bit Bush League. Is it Bush League or not? No, you tell us. 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. You know, it's Bush League, bad grass. Your backyard's brutal. Might not be Bush League, but it's brutal. You're wasting all of the time that you want to be doing other things, whether it's hanging out with your family, whether it's time on the golf course, whether it's having a pop at Nick's place, wherever. You're wasting your time dealing with your stupid yard, the weeds, the dead spots, all of that stuff. You don't want to put up with it. I know you don't want to put up with it, so stop putting up with it. Sinlawn is here so you can get all of that stuff back. Sinlawn is here so you can spend more time with your family, so you can go hang out at Nick's place, so you can go on the golf course because you're not going to be hassling with your yard anymore. Sinlawn is the evolution of the AstroTurf that was made popular by the Astrodome, and now Sinlawn, it's S-Y-N Lawn, wants to improve your lifestyle. Stop doing all the chores of mowing. You don't want to? Stop doing it. Stop pulling the weeds. No one wants to get down there and do that, so stop. Stop throwing money into an ugly yard that's going to be ugly again in 2 weeks. It's going to be ugly again in a month. It's going to stay ugly for an entire year. You're embarrassed of people seeing that yard? Well, stop worrying about it. Sinlawn artificial grass is the best on the market. Get some Sinlawn for your house. Why? Well, Sinlawn is fantastic. They offer a lifetime warranty, so you can always trust it. Products that are made right here in the USA, and the quality is top shelf. The people are fantastic at Sinlawn. They're going to take care of you. They're fully insured, fully bonded. They have their own in-house crews. They don't contract anything out. You know how terrible that can be sometimes. And Sinlawn's number one priority is making you happy. You're going to be happy after all of this. Some big projects you do, you're kind of frustrated with the process. You're not going to have to worry about any of that with Sinlawn. And Sinlawn's perfect for your yard. They're perfect for your patio. You have a kid's playground back there for your kids? Well, get some Sinlawn for that. Your pets, it gets wet, it gets muddy, they drag the mud inside. Not with Sinlawn. Or, you know, if you are a golfer, you can get that putting green in that backyard that you've always wanted. Head to 975sinlawn.com right now to learn more. That's 975sinlawn.com, 975sinlawn.com to get started on that yard of your dreams. Sinlawn, control the process from yarn to yard.
ESPN 97.5. The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Nick's Place. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We are at Nick's Place. The boys are $4 beer and well drinks, $5 Ritas, $6 wine, all until 6. Your perfect spot to watch some college basketball. First round wrapping up today, and then you get into the second round, punching the tickets to the Sweet 16 over the weekend. Todd, the show says that Draymond Green's a better player than Dylan Brooks. Cash or trash?
Oh yeah, I would cash that Draymond Green is a better player than Dylan Brooks.
I'm gonna trash that. I don't think that Draymond's a better player than Dylan Brooks right now.
Well, I do. I just think that Draymond does a ton of things really well, and that as much as I know he doesn't score or shoot it quite as good as Dylan Brooks, I mean, he defends at a very high level, and he
does Dylan
rebounds.
Not. Does Dylan not defend at a high level?
I don't like Dylan's shtick. I think Dylan has lost something.
But you like Draymond
in Memphis. I think Draymond has been subdued since the suspension. I think he's not great, but I think he's much improved in terms of controlling his emotions. Maybe he's baiting guys, but he's not like instigating to the point where he's getting kicked out. He's watching other guys get kicked out, but he doesn't get enough credit for his basketball IQ in terms of like not only where he plays defensively, but making sure everybody else is in the right spot, the way he passes to Steph and Clay, gets everybody in the right position to score. I think that he gets disrespected, deservedly so, for his emotions, but I think that he gets disrespected in terms of his overall basketball IQ and the way he plays.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has a high basketball IQ too. I don't think he's nearly as good at all the things that you mentioned at this point in his career. I think he's still living off like the first half of his career. I think he's a solid player now. I don't think he's like all world. I put him and Dylan Brooks probably on the same tier ish, and I give the slight advantage currently right now to Dylan Brooks. Draymond's had a far better career, but Dylan Brooks this season versus Draymond Green this season, give me Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks has also been a good 3-point shooter this year, 37% yes. From three with his defense. Yeah, I'll take that 3-and-D over what Draymond gives me. And like you're always like, and Dylan does have a shtick, but you're not really worried about Dylan Brooks being suspended for 10 games because he punches a dude. Like Draymond Green, you never know. Like if Draymond Green in his very next game clocked somebody and was out for 20 games, would it shock you?
No, it wouldn't. No, but but it also wouldn't shock me if somewhere in the near future Dylan Brooks does the same thing. I just think that he pushes.
I mean, he hasn't done it yet. He hasn't
done
it his entire career.
But that doesn't mean that he can't do it going forward.
I don't know how you can
more,
put that on the guy when he's never shown a history of doing it.
Because he pushes the envelope too far a lot.
But he's never crossed that line. Necessary. He's never punched somebody. Like, Draymond Green has done that. I don't know if you can put that. Well, I think Dylan Brooks, because he pushes things to the boundaries, is this close to clocking somebody. I don't think that's fair to Dylan Brooks.
Well, I really don't care if you think it's fair or not. I think that it, obviously we're on the same page with Draymond. I don't support anything Draymond's done, and he's gone way over the top, and it's been uncalled for. But that doesn't mean that there's not the potential for Dylan Brooks, whether it's because he
But I can say the same thing about you. I think that you have the potential of going up to Brian and clocking him. Like, that wouldn't be fair for me to say that to you because you
reputation.
Don't have a history of – neither does Dylan Brooks of punching somebody.
No, but he has a history of histrionics of being over the top of,
and you have a history of being a little temperamental.
Far.
Like y'all kind of have the same background.
I don't know why you want to sit there and start pointing fingers and stirring this kind of stuff up? But go right ahead.
Well, don't get sensitive about it.
I don't feel that way. Like, I'm not getting sensitive, Jeremy. I'm going to defend myself, damn it. And that's what I'm doing. I'm defending myself because you're coming at me, and I'm telling you exactly what my point of view and my stance is, and that's what I'm going to continue to do. So
and that's
I don't
fair.
Have
and
a history
I can say
of getting technical
with
fouls
him,
with
not
Brian.
Fair.
I don't have a history of getting technical.
You have
fouls
a history of being temperamental.
I don't have a history
sure.
of getting thrown out, so I don't think there's any reason why that Brian should think or fear that or that anybody should say someday I'm going to get thrown off a show or I'm going to get ejected, as opposed to a guy like Dylan Brooks who likes to get up in LeBron's grill and go too far and push him when the ball's not in play and try and do too much to where it draws the ire of multiple people on the court, on the sidelines, and other ways to where I can have the opinion that I think Dylan Brooks could be on his way to someday possibly going too far.
And a lot of people could say that your aggression just now, and you're right on the cusp of throwing a punch at somebody else. Like, I don't think that you would do that, which is why I don't think it's fair to say that about Dylan Brooks. He's never shown a history of doing that.
Again, I don't care if you think it's fair or not. It's my opinion, and I'm stating it, and I believe because there is a history of him getting technicals, getting thrown out, pushing it too far, doing it when the ball's not even in play, getting coaches involved. Those are the kind of things where it only takes – you see the signs where it only takes that next level, and sometimes you can't predict when it's going to get to that next level, that things can happen.
Would you think DeMar DeRozan had that in his bag, and all of a sudden he's throwing an elbow at Dylan Brooks? Like, some of those dudes just get triggered, and it happens. I don't think that it takes, like, their history of their behavior.
Made the argument for me. If that's the
case.
Well,
no, I'm saying that at times you can be aggressive. I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
But
no, I'm saying it's random.
Look at the way it played out last night, though. I think that could have just been shoves and words. And then all of a sudden, you didn't expect that the unexpected shoulder to the chin. And then when the guy started falling over on the court and that became a scrum, now all bets are off. Anybody could start throwing because they're defending themselves. They're worried about their safety.
Yeah. But like, does DeRozan have that history? Like, I don't think DeRozan has that history. You know the league far better than I do. I watch the Rockets. I don't watch tons of NBA. Like, I don't think DeMar DeRozan has the history of being an aggressor. And we saw him twice yesterday be the aggressor, where he took out Jalen Green intentionally, and then he threw an elbow at Dylan Brooks. Like, he now has a history of intentionally fouling somebody, throwing an elbow. Dylan Brooks' history is that he's an annoyance, that he's Patrick Beverly. Like that's why I just feel like I should stick up for Dylan Brooks here, because he's never thrown a punch in a game that I know about.
He's cheap-shotted guys. He's taking guys out physically. It's not just about being an annoyance when you've thrown the cheap shot, and there's been multiple cheap shots. It's not just a shot below the belt to the groin. It's guys in the air, plays like that, which, whether you planned on it being that way or that outcome or not, that leads to the next level of things as people get fired up. Because, look, I will answer your question on DeMar. I know where DeMar comes from. I know DeMar is a tough city kid. I know that he probably is not going to back down to anybody. But DeMar DeRozan has never been a guy that I thought would be an instigator or do some of the things I saw last night. But yeah. We don't know the whole story either.
Here's the I'm really curious why DeMar got triggered. Like, I think it was what you said and then, like, what I said too. I think it was a combination of he was frustrated. Maybe Jalen said something after he blocked that dunk attempt, and then the fact that he wasn't having a good shooting game. I think he was, like, 3-for-15 in that game yesterday from the floor, 4-for-15. So, like, that can add up. Like, that can frustrate you. Here was the Bulls broadcast, and I usually like Adam Amin. I don't know who does Bulls color. Do you know, Plankers?
It's normally Stacey King.
So probably Stacey King, and Adam Amin during that little fiasco yesterday. I think they took some unfair shots for Dylan Brooks. I'm going to stand up for him again. Here was the Bulls broadcast during that little scrum.
Oh, boy, here we go. Now Dylan Brooks is going to make things happen the only way he knows how. And Craig is going to separate him. Bodies are hitting the deck, including security guards.
Well, Dylan Brooks always got to try to start something.
He's got a reputation for this.
He didn't like the foul. Yeah, it was a hard foul. He didn't like it. And then he went up and said something to DeMar. He got in his face, and then that's how it all started.
Okay.
They took some shots at Dylan Brooks.
I mean, I understand, with personal experience, how you have to be homers on the home telecast when it's going back to Chicago, but that's not how it all started. I mean, it started because of what DeMar did. I saw the same thing on Twitter where a guy just put out the clip from the point of Dylan Brooks squaring off with DeMar DeRozan and pointed out that this was typical Dylan Brooks, and everybody, including a lot of Rockets fans, said, why don't you find the context of watching what started it, what triggered it first, how they got to that point before you jump off the handle? And the guy's like, no, I just like making the example of Dylan Brooks because I don't like him. I get you don't like him, but understand the context before you kill him.
Yeah, I don't think you should, like, and you know this, being with the Rockets for as long as you were, like, you throw other guys under the bus, I think is a bit classless. And you might have this feeling, like, and look, we're having this, conversation, which I think is a good conversation, good back and forth, about what we think about Dylan Brooks. Like, we're not employed by either team. We're not employed by the NBA. We're giving our opinions on talk radio. I would never say anything like that about an opposing player on a broadcast. Even if I felt that way, that would never be said on the broadcast. And I don't want to speak for you. How do you feel about that?
The way I used to do it was, I'm not going to seek out criticism and excessive criticism on a player. But in the middle of a game, if I felt like it was a cheap shot or that a guy went way over and above, I'm going to call that out. I'm going to say, I don't think that was necessary. I think he clotheslined him. I think he undercut him. I'm going to call that part of it out. Like, I'm not, you know, if there is a reputation there, I'm sure it'll come. It would come up in the course of a conversation. Hey, look, we know that this guy's got a reputation. All I know is that play right there. You either, you know, you say what you saw and you say
sure.
that it was unnecessary.
And I think you leave it at that. Like, I don't think that you yeah. throw in any sort of, like, adverbs or adjectives. Like, I think that this looks a bit dirty. And then that's, like, as far as you're willing to go. Like, you can't really say, like, he's got a history. He's got baggage. He's a terrible human being. This is what happens whenever Dylan Brooks is playing.
Well, but I think that there's a difference there, too, because I think you can say that, you know, you can say that the guy's got a history because it's fact. Like, we know his resume. Like, if Draymond did something like that, we'd say, well, we know Draymond's got a history throughout his career in the league of a guy that brings a little extra. He's been suspended for it. You can mention the facts because that's a fact. But I'm not going to say that he's an awful person because, to be honest with you, in the conversation we just had, everyone I've spoken to said Dylan Brooks is a really, really good dude off the floor. Like, this is just part of how he's always played the game or he wants to play the game. But the fact is, in the locker room, taking care of the ball kids or, you know, dealing with sponsors, I've heard nothing but great things about how he is.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. When we come back, the next few matchup in the Killer Bees Fight Club bracket. Who advanced yesterday? Blankers and Branham not fighting today, at least not in the bracket. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.